WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave. On today's archive edition of Fresh Air, a concert with Jay McShann, the last of the great Kansas City pianists and band leaders. Last night, he received a Pioneer Award from the Rhythm and Blues Foundation. The foundation works for wider recognition and financial support for R&B artists of the 40s, 50s, and 60s. Jay McShann grew up in Oklahoma and came to Kansas City in 1937, when it was the capital for boogie-woogie, blues, and swing. In Kansas City, he assembled his now legendary big band. Some of his sidemen included bassist Gene Ramey, drummer Gus Johnson, and blues shouters Joe Turner and Walter Brown. But his most remarkable find was Charlie Parker, who made his recording debut with McShann. The big band split up during World War II, when McShann and most of his musicians were drafted. The jazz scene changed after the war, and listeners lost track of Jay McShann. The 70s brought a resurgence of interest in the Kansas City style, and since then, McShann's made many solo and small group recordings. Jay McShann celebrated his 80th birthday in January and continues to perform. Terry Grohl spoke with him in 1987.
Jay McShann, welcome to Fresh Air. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Terry, and it's a pleasure to be here.
If I may, can I make a request for the opening? Could you open with one of the songs that you wrote and that is named after you, Hootie Blues?
Be glad to. So long, but I had a little break, you see. Well, I'm doing all right. Well, I found a little Cupid doll. Well, I'm doing all right. Well, I found a little Cupid doll. Well, she lives three flights out, and she sends me with a smile. Well, she calls me her lover, yes, and a beggar too. Well, she calls me her lover, yes, and a beggar too. Now ain't you sorry, little girl, that my new little girl ain't you. Yes, and a beggar too. Well, she calls me her lover. Yes, and a beggar too. Now ain't you sorry, little girl, that my new little girl ain't you. Ain't you sorry, little girl, that my new little girl ain't you. Ain't you. Mm.
That sounds absolutely terrific. My guest is Jay McShann at the piano. Can we go back to around the period when that tune was written, back to the 1930s when you came to Kansas City and started putting your big band together? Kansas City was a real mecca for jazz then. What were your first impressions when you got there?
Well, my first impressions was I was excited and seeing all this happening and guys like Joe Turner, Pete Johnson, playing all the boogie-woogie, Joe Turner singing blues right off the top of his head, you know, he'd make up words as he'd go along. And all these musicians were playing all this swing music, you know, and musicians from north, east, south, and west, and it was excitable. It was exciting.
How did you decide to put together a big band? How did you go about starting to do that?
Well, what happened, we had a small group at first, I imagine about four, five, sometimes six pieces. And then we got a job to play for Walkathon. And that required about 12, 13-piece band, big band. And so we took this job. And so quite naturally, we had to have a big band. And the Walkathon lasted about 4 months. And so during the 4 months, that's how we got our book together and then got the band together so fast.
What would you do to go recruit musicians? Where would you go to hear who the best musicians were?
Well, the way I did, I even went up to Omaha. And at that time, Nat Towles had one of the finest bands in the country. And I went up to listen to some of his musicians play. And when I left Omaha, I left there with about four of them.
Was that considered bad form to steal musicians from somebody else's band?
Well, no, it's not bad form as long as, you know, if they owe the band leader, then you give them the money to pay the band leader and bring them on. Really, it's nice, much nicer for them to give a notice, you know, but, you know, guys do things like that.
Probably the greatest discovery you made was finding Charlie Parker and getting him into your band. How did you decide to recruit him?
Well, I just happened to be passing through the streets one night, and they piped all the music out in Kansas City, and I heard this particular sound, and so I went in to see who it was, and then so we met and we talked, and he told me he'd been out of town because I thought I hadn't been in Kansas City very long, and I thought I'd met most of the musicians. So he said he'd been down in the Ozarks with George Lee's band. It's hard to get musicians to go down there because it's so dead, you know, and like cats like to be around where the happenings is, you know. And so he said he wanted to do a little woodshedding, so he went down there with George's band.
And then you got him in your band. Was Jumpin' Blues, I think. Did you co-write that with him, Jumpin' the Blues?
Yes, we did.
Could you play it for us?
Okay.
This is a song that my guest, Jay McShann, co-wrote with Charlie Parker.
Thank you.
That's Jump in the Blues, played by my guest, Jay McShann. Let's talk some more about the big band for a little while. It's such a big responsibility to hold a band together and to make sure all the players show up on time and that they're there when you're ready to travel and everything. Did you enjoy that part of it?
Well, that was quite a responsibility. But we made it easier, I guess, because, all the guys were young and crazy.
I think the way you did it,
since everybody was crazy, you did a lot of crazy delegating, you know. And like some guys, Gene Ramey, he would always look out for a couple of three of the guys. And I could count on Bob Maybane keeping a couple of three guys straight, you know. And I liked that, and it was no problem.
Around during the war, you were drafted, right?
That's true.
A lot of guys in the band were drafted. Did you realize that was going to be the end of the band?
Well, no, I didn't have any idea that would be the end of the band because at the time we were booked about a couple of years ahead and we were really stretched out. But they had been trying to catch up with me and we was on the road traveling. They couldn't find me, so we played a one-night stand. So then they took me right on to Leavenworth after that, doing intermission.
Huh. What happened after the war when your big band had split up? What did you decide to do? Where did you go?
Well, after the war, most of the dance halls were made into
clubs.
Most of the dance halls, you know, were made where they throw these balls.
Bowling alleys.
Bowling alleys. Yeah, I couldn't even think of it. And then it was quite expensive to move a big band then.
Yeah.
But it has gotten quite expensive. And then people were buying combos, small groups, smaller groups, 4, 5, and 6-piece groups.
So where did you go? Did you go back to Kansas City?
Yes, I went back to Kansas City. And then I tried the big band again, but it wasn't going to work. It didn't work.
Because of financial reasons?
That's right. Yeah, financial reasons were just too outlandish.
I think a lot of people lost track of where you were when you went to Kansas City. Did that bother you?
No, I didn't. You see, because my kids at that time, they were getting around school age, and I knew I had to pick out some place for them to go to school. And so I decided to go back to Kansas City.
It's difficult to have a family when you're on the road all the time.
Yes, it is. And so I came off the road, but I worked around Kansas City, maybe within the radius of, 600-700 miles, and in Kansas City, you know. Continued to play, but I didn't get out and stay out on the road, you know, like, until after they finished high school.
So what kind of places were you playing when you returned?
Oh, it was nightclubs and, you know, yeah. Nightclubs and so forth.
Playing the same kinds of songs you play with the band, but with
primarily the same songs, but, you know, with smaller groups, sometimes we'd have a trio, sometimes maybe we'd have a quartet, you know, whatever the gig called for. We had to kind of, you know, go lean with the gig, whatever was happening.
My guest is the great Kansas City pianist, Jay McShann, and we're going to take a short break, then he's going to play some more, we're going to talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Jay McShann, can I ask you to play something else for us? How about a standard? This isn't the kind of thing you used to play back in the old days.
Okay. Thank you. grow too old to dream. I'll have you to remember, and when I grow too old to dream, your love will be in my heart. So kiss me, oh, kiss me, my sweet. And now let us part. And when I grow too old to dream, well, your love will be in my heart. Kiss me, my sweet, and now, oh, let us part. And when I grow too old to dream, your love will be in my heart. Well, your love will be in my heart. Well, your love will be in my heart.
A beautiful version of that. You didn't really sing too much, at least not on your records, when you had your big band, and the singers were Walter Brown, Big Joe Turner, Al Hibbler sometimes sang with you. How come you never got to sing yourself very much? Or maybe you did in concerts, which I wasn't around for.
No, I didn't. I didn't do any singing. In fact, I didn't do any singing at all. And I always felt that, you know, with the big band, you always, you wanted to serve good singers.
Wait a minute. You are so, implying that you are not a good singer.
But then after the war, you know, then I couldn't afford the good singers. And so I had to, you know, people would come up and ask for tunes. And they said, well, we want somebody to sing it. And so then I had to sing it, you know. So that's why I started.
So you don't think of yourself as a singer?
No.
Well, you don't have the kind of really big shouter type voice. But I really do love your voice very much. Were you self-conscious at first when you started to sing?
Well, I guess it does kind of work on you to a certain extent, because you don't want to, I didn't want to do it, you know. But then after you started doing it, you know, well, then it just comes in just like you're playing, you know.
Can I ask you how you started to play piano, how you first started to learn the instrument?
Well, you know, when you're in school, your parent, the band, the guy who got the band at school, you know, he wants you to get an instrument and play an instrument, you know. And my folks was too poor to buy me an instrument. And I wanted to either play trumpet or sax or clarinet. But they didn't have the money, and so consequently I couldn't get no horn to play. So we had a beat-up Kimball piano there, so I just started fooling around on the piano.
And then you left home when you were pretty young to try to make it?
Yes, yes. I guess I left home around 16, something like that.
Did you play in a lot of other people's bands before you got your own?
Yes,
together?
I played with Al Denny, who was one of the first big bands I'd ever played with in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I also played with the Gray Brothers. They had a small group, and that was the beginning.
I think we can all hear your piano style a lot more now, too. Now that you're playing in small groups and playing solo, you can hear a pianist in a way that you can't when they're in a big band.
Well, you know, when I had a big band, I always felt like that we had all those horns up there. And I always wanted everybody to work. You know, I wanted to hear everybody working, because it used to bug me to see maybe three-fourths of the guys standing up holding their horns. You know, that always, you know, and I always liked to see them busy all the time, an ensemble or something going all the time, you know, with the big band.
And so they always told me, though, I should have taken more solos, but I always liked that ensemble.
I just one last thing. You know, I've been calling you the last of the great Kansas City pianists, and it's it must be something you think about a lot to be a survivor like that.
Well, I enjoyed playing music, and it's always good to be a survivor.
Terry Gross spoke with Jay McShann in 1987. Last night, he won a Pioneer Award from the Rhythm and Blues Foundation. Jay McShann's latest recordings include Some Blues on Chascoro Records and Just a Lucky So-and-So on Sackville Records. He was also the focus of the documentary film The Last of the Blue Devils. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air.